Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I'm Dave Smith. He is the king of the caucus, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. Hope everybody is having a good one out there in internet land. Hope you had a good weekend. How was your weekend, Rob?
It was fun. I did the Philly show. Went well.
Oh, nice.
And then we partied at someone's house afterwards. The whole Meacock crew got together. It was a good time. Mm-hmm.
All wearing masks, I presume.
No, we just had fun. We just lived life. That's what we decided to do.
Well, I hope you enjoy dying now that you've been around people without masks on. Oh, what a weird world. Well, that's awesome. Some of the Meacocks came out. You had a good time.
Yeah, but Mike Heiss, he didn't want to give up the belt. He said, I have to fight him for it.
I think you know what you have to do now. I mean, I understand. It is technically his property, and we respect property rights. But he gave you, a pretty solid outline of what you have to do if you want that belt now. And my position as the Libertarian Tupac is I will respect the results of the duel.
All right. We'll see. So, I feel like I thought we were trying to build a nonviolent movement. So it's funny to kick it off with a fight for a belt. But, you know.
So nonviolent in points. But this sounds like voluntary violence. I'm actually okay with it. So I'm gonna give it my blessing. I say maybe we put it on a pay-per-view. We raised some money for the Mises Caucus PAC. I think it's all a very good
idea. I'm going to pull a Khabib and go, due to COVID, I'm not sure I feel comfortable leaving my residency to train or actually fight him.
There you go. Oh, speaking of fights, did you see fucking Mayweather and Logan Paul agreed to a fight?
I mean, Mayweather's making more money than ever, but also what a loser. He just wants to fight people he know is no risk and make, I mean, God bless. He's going to make hundreds of millions and yeah. He doesn't need to do anything, but it sucks. Fight if you want to fight.
It's lame. Like the Conor thing, I'll give a pass to, because that was kind of like a huge show, and it is, say what you will. I mean, okay, Conor, you know, yes, it's a little ridiculous for the greatest boxer of all time to be boxing someone who's never had a professional boxing fight. But Conor McGregor was a multiple weight class champion in combat sports who, you know, did it primarily with his boxing. So there's something, you know, to be said there and whatever, you know, you can make the argument for either way, but there was a lot of interest in it. This is just like, dude, now you're fighting a YouTuber. Like, come on. I mean, if you're retired, retired, but you're still the best in the history of the weight class. But for Logan Paul, I got to say, I kind of respect it. I mean, you know, look, dude, he's fucking going for it. And it kind of is a no lose situation for him. I mean, even if you get fucking knocked out in the first round, I don't know, fucking fought Mayweather. What are you going to do? Isn't he a lot bigger than Mayweather? Isn't he like 180 pounds?
I mean, 180, it's not like that's a heavyweight against a light.
No, I'm just saying how they even like, I guess it'll be an exhibition.
But so can you imagine if you're sanctions. A pro boxer, just, I mean, as comics, we've seen YouTubers kind of jump the line and I just see it as entertainment. God bless. They're doing their thing. But can you imagine being a pro boxer and you're watching now YouTubers just totally jump the line?
Yeah,
it sucks.
It kind of makes sense in a weird way. O'Brien tells me he's 190. I mean, look, not that he's going to win a fucking boxing match with Roy Jones. It's just, you know, anyway. Roy Jones with Mayweather.
You know what he should do is Jake Paul should go just take all the steroids, get up to like 220, and then at least they can sell it on. He's got the knockout, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he's got what, 40 pounds on Mayweather. Yeah. Mayweather used to fight, I think, even lower than 150, but whatever. Mayweather will just box him up. It's probably what's going to happen. But I don't know. I really don't know what else to say about it. It just seems kind of ridiculous to me. And then you're also like, fine, I'll order the pay-per-view. I don't know. When am I going to not do it? Can you guys get Snoop to comment again, to commentate again? All right.
Well, it'd be
fine.
Great if McGregor was the undercard against the brother. Now that would be a hell of an event.
That would be an event. Fucking McGregor would fuck either of those guys up. But anyway, so there was getting back into it. Instead of the these distracting sideshows, let's get back into the real distracting sideshows and our politics. So Trump had a campaign rally in Georgia. I don't know if you watched any of that. It was his first rally since, you know, election day and all this craziness has gone down. Did you see some of it?
Yeah, I watched some of it this morning, and it seems like it's right on the cusp of turning. Let's go, Trump. You can get them. You can get these people to go out there and riot. Let's do it.
Yeah, well, he certainly could if he wanted to. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting visual. And, you know, I saw it was either a day or 2 days before that. There were these I forget exactly what the hashtag was that was trending. It was something like goodbye MAGA or something like that. MAGA's over. Something was trending, you know, a bunch of liberals. Just slamming.
MAGA's going to be greater than ever.
Yeah. Well, but really, you know, it's like an interesting point. It's a point that Jeff Deist, the president of the Mises Institute, a really brilliant guy, he's made this a lot, but he was like, you know, politically vanquished people don't just disappear. They don't just go away just because they lost an election. And it's really, it's funny. It's really this kind of mass delusion that people think, even like when an election is so close like this one, you know, when it took days after the election day to even figure out who won, and so many states were, you know, like up in the air with these razor thin margins. And so when you have an election, you know, that's like 51-49% or something like that, and then you can look at that 49% and be like, ha ha, no more of you. You're like, I don't know. There's still a lot of them. And it was, you know, it was like one of the first little glimpses of of proof that this base for Donald Trump is not going anywhere. And you could look at it even in the same sense, and it was much smaller. But if you look at, say, like Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton in 2016, Bernie Sanders is this electrified base, you know, like he's going out and drawing 10,000 people. They're screaming their heads off. They love him. And like, okay, Hillary Clinton ends up winning, partially because the whole superdelegate system was basically rigged for her, partly because the DNC was, you know, doing everything they could behind the scenes to cheat for her, and partially because, you know, she had, you know, a lot of support in amongst Black people, amongst different groups, and, you know, whatever. But it's not as if when Hillary Clinton wins, you say, well, that's it for that Bernie Sanders thing, right? That's it for the leftists who oppose the Democratic establishment. It's like, really? Is it? Look at what's happened in the years since. It's not like they're gone. It's not like they don't exist anymore. They are in many ways more powerful than ever, and more present than ever. So, you know, just because Donald Trump is not going to be, you know, inaugurated for a second term on January 20th, it's just one more sign. It's like all these people still exist, and there's far too many of them, and they're far too passionate to vanquish. And so I don't know. It is interesting, and I've always thought from the very beginning, since Trump was running for president. And I was really kind of shocked by it at the time in 2016. I didn't think when I first heard Donald Trump's pitch, I just didn't think it would have anywhere near this type of like that it would resonate this much with people. But the thing to me that still, you know, remains as the most interesting story is how much Trump supporters love Donald Trump. I mean, they love him. Like, he is their guy. And they are, you know, part of the reason why the media is freaking out so much and all of these people are making it such a horrible thing, what Donald Trump is doing, contesting the results of the election, you know, is because they realize how many of these people are loyal to him and not the system, and that they'll believe him. And they do. And understandably, at least from my perspective, understandably, they believe him. I mean, what are you gonna, you know, it's like if the media is so obviously out to get Donald Trump from day one, like they just decided their job is not to call balls and strikes. It's not to report the news. Their job is to ruin this guy. And that is undeniably, I think, to any reasonable person, the case. Well, why the hell would those people ever trust the media when they say, oh, no, but seriously, he really lost this one and it's really dangerous to continue to contest it? Of course, they're not going to believe him. And again, I think this is politically one of the, if not the most interesting dynamics in this country going forward. This huge group of people who do not believe in the system anymore, who do not see, will not see Joe Biden as a legitimate president, don't see any of these institutions as legitimate. It's a, there's a lot of potential there. There is also some danger there, but it's, that's the situation one way or the other. So that's the story. And it was crazy. And you also realize, and I don't know, I'm curious maybe what you think about this, but you start to realize that not only are Trump supporters not going to be vanquished, but neither is Trump. I mean, I was thinking about it at this rally the other day as I'm watching it. And I was like, you know what? Donald Trump enjoys these rallies way too much. He's way too good at them. And there's still way too much interest in them for me to think they're going to stop after January 20th. I think Trump rallies are going to be a thing going forward. And I think he's going to keep doing them and keep drawing huge crowds. What's that going to look like?
Is he going to start selling tickets for them?
I don't know. I don't think he cares.
Even at $10 a ticket, he could be like the top grossing act of 2021.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you taken a look at the crowd in the Trump rallies? I don't know. $10 a ticket might be pretty steep for some of those people. Like, oh. I don't know. Let's not get crazy. There's $10 a ticket. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, he could and make a ton of money off of it. I don't know if that's his interest. I think Donald Trump sees that there's more power in just having these huge crowds. And I think he really gets off on it.
Also, it's never going to get boring for him to go, I won. I totally won. I'm a winner. Everything good's from me.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I mean, look, that is Donald Trump at his essence. I mean, I think that's really like what so much of it comes down to with Trump is that he just simply will not acknowledge that he lost and Joe Biden won. Now, by the way, as I've been saying all along, I'm fairly agnostic on the claims of, you know, like voter fraud and stuff like that. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past anyone. You know, to me, I think, I was talking about with Michael Malice a couple episodes ago, the difference between red-pilled and blue-pilled libertarians. And I think one of the differences is that red-pilled libertarians are much more open to the idea that some truly fraudulent, shady, criminal shit is going on. You're like, yeah, I wouldn't put it past him. I have heard, you know, that there certainly is some evidence. I haven't seen enough to like conclude that this election was stolen from Donald Trump. But regardless, you know, I'm agnostic more or less on the issue. Like I'm open to the idea that that happened. However, Donald Trump himself, I think, is just all about himself and all about whether or not he wins or loses. I think that's his whole identity is built around being a winner. So I almost think he's boxed into a corner where he cannot, by his nature, ever accept that Joe Biden beat him. I know there are people who are saying they think at the last minute he's going to concede and he'll be at the inauguration and all this. I just don't see it happening. That's my guess.
There's a ton of, have you watched any of these hearings? Because it's testimony after testimony. Some people just saying, hey, the Democrats that were working there were throwing people out. And then there was just the shady stuff of saying, hey, go take lunch and then locking the doors. Hilarious.
That is a pretty funny move.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying it's okay, but it's pretty hilarious.
It's really funny. But then you had people were giving direct testimony of votes being recounted, ballots that were in order, also ballots being brought to like a back room for to be counted. There was that security footage of ballots coming out from under the table after they sent the Republicans home. You had a truck driver who talked about that he was driving vote ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. You've got a lot of direct testimony this at this point, which it's weird because it seems like basically these are not courts. They're like the Senate hearings or the committee for whatever. And then you get testimony after testimony of people coming up, giving firsthand witness of really shady shit or claims of fraud. And then the reporting is they go, all right, we're certifying the election. And the news just goes zero evidence. Well, who the fuck, what are all of these testimonies? Is that not evidence? Is that
well,
not?
Well, of course it is. I mean, it's that we're way past the point of the claim zero evidence being, you know, anything. But then the media will, what they do is, and they are, I must say, they're very good at this, is that they use these particular turns of phrase that then get repeated over and over again by everybody within the corporate press. So they'll say things like, you know, there's like zero evidence of voter fraud turned into zero evidence of widespread fraud that would affect the election results, which now you're into like this vague territory where you're like, yeah, okay. I mean, I don't know exactly how you'd measure, like, you know, is there enough evidence to prove that there was massive voter fraud that, you know, swayed the election one way or the other? Probably not. But to say there's zero evidence of voter fraud, I mean, that's just not true. Eyewitness testimony is evidence in any court of law that is considered evidence. If you were like accused of murder and there's somebody who's like, I saw it and I saw Rob Bernstein murder this guy, you can't say there's zero evidence. It's like, oh, maybe that's not enough to convict you. It's just one eyewitness, but that certainly is evidence and would be admissible in any court of law. Again, like, no. And you notice these tactics of the corporate press, which if you're, you know, if you're trained at all, not in a, you know, formal sense, but if you know kind of how they operate at all, you see these things. And so you see the fact that so many of these hearings that you're pointing out where they'd be, you know, hearings in front of state senators, they get zero coverage. And not only zero coverage, I mean, that's an understatement. They're straight up suppressed.
Well, they did.
You can't Google them. If you go Bing on Bing.com, you find these results that you don't find on Google. They're not trending on social media when you know they would be. You know they would be. You know, and this is a very new phenomenon, by the way. It used to be, I mean, outside of the last 2 months before the presidential election, I would see things trending on Twitter all the time that were in Trump's favor. It's just enough people are tweeting about it, so it makes it up to that list. And all of a sudden, that's pretty much gone. Like, you see very little of that. And but then, right, and this is what I mean about the corporate press tactics, then when this like crazy lady was testifying, you know, in front of the state senators, that then all of a sudden this is everywhere. It's everywhere. It's all of a sudden this is newsworthy when it's a person who doesn't seem to have a lot of credibility, who did seem to be drunk. She seemed like she was drunk or on pills or something. And she seemed a little crazy, but, you know, so that goes everywhere. Saturday Night Live's doing a sketch about it. It's on all the corporate press. Everyone's reporting on it. It's up on Twitter all over the place. That goes there. But I've seen tons of testimony from other people who just sounded like regular, credible people, basically saying similar things. That doesn't go anywhere. That's not an interesting story. You know, so like, you see these tactics being used and it's like, okay, there's like, no matter what actually happened here, that's fucking shady that you guys will suppress this story, but then give the story oxygen only when it suits your narrative.
Yeah. I was going to say that crazy lady thing, that was there's hours and hours of testimony where each person for 5 minutes, you're like, holy shit, that's a huge allegation. Like, and then it keeps going. So you almost get bored because you're like, this is 5 minutes after five, or actually, I think they were giving people like 2 minutes at a time and then the buzzer. And then the only thing they showed on the news was that crazy lady.
Yeah. Yeah. The one who, you know, you can easily discredit. And like, you know, again, it's possible that there are people who are lying. Even if someone, you know, signs an affidavit, it's possible that they're lying about this stuff. But you do have a lot of people claiming, a lot of poll watchers claiming they weren't allowed to watch, or they're, you know, the thing like you said, like, oh, go take a lunch, and then they don't say this. A lot of people claiming that they were instructed to do shady things. There's just a lot of it. you know? However, the other thing that, you know, is really on full display, at least the way I see it, is the point that I was making last week, that me and you were talking about, where it's just like you really see how much Trump really had no plan going into this election to deal with all of this. It's really something to witness that Donald Trump actually just spent months claiming that vote by mail was ripe with fraud while having no plan to deal with it or to even a plan of how to expose it, let alone a plan of how to, you know, prevent it. And he ended up, you know, his strategy might be what cost him the election. In the fact that he basically was just demonizing vote by mail to the point that he convinced his people not to vote by mail. And perhaps the move would have just been to, you know, to find a way. I suppose he could have thread the needle and said, you know, this is ripe for fraud, but this is why we got to vote by mail. If you can't get into the polls, you got to vote by mail. You know, Scott Horton was making the point the other day that he was like, look, older voters tend to skew Republican, and they also tend to be more afraid of COVID. And so you probably had a lot of older voters, who knows how many, but I'm sure there were a good amount of older voters who would have voted for Donald Trump, who listened to Donald Trump demonize vote by mail and basically tell you the whole thing was fraudulent to begin with for months. So he really, this is Donald Trump. From the beginning, all throughout his presidency, he has an unbelievable genius level instinct on how to market himself and how exactly, you know, what to say, how to pull at people's strings, like how to get people to, like really energetic and supporting him. He knew exactly which lane to fill in terms of like talking points and things like that. He knew exactly how to attack other people. He's really genius at that. But he never had any plan to actually get anything done. He never had any plan like, okay, here's how we're actually going to drain the swamp, or here's how we're actually going to, you know, rewrite this trade agreement or end these wars or enforce immigration or anything like that. Never had a plan. And he really never had any plan on how to deal with this whole overhaul of the voting. And that to me is like, in many ways, that's what led to his downfall. If you call it a downfall, what by that I just mean not getting reelected. I don't know. I mean, he's still got a lot of money and he's probably still going to be a force in American politics, unless they fucking really go after him and try to throw him in jail, which, you know, I wouldn't be surprised.
Trump TV.
Maybe. I have a feeling that Donald Trump is going to be, that they're going to attempt to silence him by any means necessary after he gets out. The more I'm looking at this, I'm like, this guy is just too dangerous right now to the establishment. He might be even more dangerous outside of the White House than inside it. And I have a feeling you're going to see Donald Trump get kicked off social media. I think they're going to come at him with legal shit. I think they're going to really try to ruin the guy. I could be wrong about that, but that'd be my guess.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Do you see Barr is trying to set up a Mueller type team for basically investigating the origins of the whole Russia collusion story? And now Democrats are going nuts saying that like he's just working for Trump. Can't be done. I think Durbin's the guy to run the committee. I don't know if I have that name not right.
Yeah, Dick Durbin might be. I mean, I don't know. Like, my take on Barr has always kind of been like that. I just don't really trust that guy. And I think he's always there as kind of like, in effect, controlled opposition. Like, he's like, no, don't worry. We're going to investigate this and get to the bottom of it. And guess what? Nothing ever comes of it. And then the Democrats go nuts over him. Oh, my God, this guy's crazy. But nothing's coming from any of this. And the idea that he's basically been talking about investigating the origins of the Russia investigation since he came on. And, you know, it's so obvious there was such blatant criminal activity that by the FBI, by the CIA, and all of this shit, and the fact that they haven't even had a fall guy yet, you know, like not even one guy was like, okay, we'll punish him, but not really clean up the whole system. So I'm just not I'm not holding my breath, waiting for any of that shit to happen. But it'll be, you know, I'm sure the Democrats will flip out about it for a little bit. All right, so Rudy Giuliani popped positive for the vid. He's was in the hospital last I saw. Rudy Giuliani is is in his mid 70s, and he's not exactly the poster boy of health. So you know, we'll see. He'll probably be fine. Overwhelming odds are that he'll be okay, but we'll see what happens with that. But I did notice, you know, there's one, the coverage of Rudy Giuliani getting COVID, I just found like incredibly disturbing. And it's one of the things that throughout the entire COVID hysteria has really bothered me the most. And it's the selective, how do I put this exactly? The selective kind of contempt, or the selective, you know, like almost punishment that is not applied equally across the board. But so if somebody you don't like gets COVID, then it's kind of like we're all laughing at him and we're all hammering him and look, this is your fault. But if someone who you like gets it, then it's just supposed to be sympathy and we just feel bad for them. It's something that's been going on from the beginning of the, I mean, it's much bigger than this. It's true with any type of power. Whether it's political power or social power or anything, it's, you get to choose who you're going to hammer, and you can be very selective in when you do that.
I think the X factor on this one is that the Trump team, these guys are real Americans. They said, listen, there's a virus out there, but we got to work. We're showing up to work. And if we get sick, shit, that sucks, but we got to work. And that's the absolute number one thing that they want to do away with, is this idea that you can take risk upon yourself and go work. And honestly, the Trump team's lucky to be powerful enough that they get to choose to work even and make that decision for themselves. A lot of people don't get to make that decision for themselves. Most of the other people that have gotten like sick that you're describing, like when a celebrity gets sick, I don't know if that they're necessarily out there working, or if they are, the media will pretend like that's a job that absolutely has to be done, right, kind of thing. And so God bless them that, you know, they continued working, but I guess politics, there's no real job to do. These guys are choosing to work. And so that's the real, it's that idea that they're fighting against more than anything, is like, look, these people have decided that they're going to continue working, and this is the consequence. They're getting sick. This is why no one else should be going about and doing their job.
Yeah. Well, but it's a real, you know, it's a real problem in general with rules, when they're not applied equally, or with any fairness. No, you're not necessarily equally, but fairly, you know? And it's something that is very useful for people with an agenda. So in other words, and I don't even just mean laws, I mean like rules, social norms, things like that. You could say that, whatever, take something like, you know, even like political correctness or something like that, right? You can set up these rules, these social norms, that say like, well, you can't say this type of thing because that's considered racist, or you can't say this type of thing because that's considered sexist or something like that. But if you actually look at how it gets applied, you know, you create this rule and then you get punished for breaking it, but not everyone gets punished the same way. You know, if Donald Trump, the amount of things that we've heard about Donald Trump is dog whistling, or he said this racist thing. I mean, everybody knows like the top 10 things that Donald Trump has said, because the corporate press and academia and Hollywood and all these people, they just hammer it all the time. Half of them are just made up, you know, like the fucking, or completely taken out of context and exaggerated, you know. But whatever, the comment about, you know, Mexico isn't sending their best, or the comment about the Mexican judge, or, you know, the comment about the, you know, the ones that are just made up, like the him doing the impression of the reporter with one arm, or, you know, him, what was it, the alt-right good people on both sides things, or just completely lied about this shit. But so like Joe Biden had that comment about integrated schools being like racial jungles, but you don't see nearly the outrage about that. I mean, it just, you don't see a conversation every day about Joe Biden obviously dog whistling and what the word jungle means in this context and all of this. It's just kind of, you know, you let it go. You know, and this happens all the time where you have people who violate these rules, but don't really get punished in the same way. You know, like that's just kind of either it's given a charitable interpretation or it's just kind of swept under the rug and we just don't really talk about it, you know. And this has been very true with COVID from the very beginning. That was, I remember talking about this months and months ago. It was actually just before the riots started, when they were doing these stories demonizing 20-year-olds who were going to the beach, and just like, oh my God, this is so horrible. Look at these people going out on spring break. So this was back in spring. It was like when the thing first started. We had only been locked down for like a couple months, you know? And I remember just thinking it was horrible. It's like, this is just really, there's something about this that is really profoundly wrong. We've decided as a society that the true evil people are the 20-year-olds who have just been cooped up for 2 months and now want to go out to a beach with their friends. Like these people are we're supposed to look at them as evil. Like, do you remember, like, I don't know, you were restricted by your Jewish ways, but like at 20, do you remember how big hanging out was? And like hanging out with your friends is like what you live for when you're 20. Now, it was like such an important thing. And so, you know, it's like they were like cooped up for months and then they wanted to go hang out with their friends. And like you have this entire media class who's demonizing them. I just found something truly like sick about it. Like, oh, we're just but then, of course, once the fucking protests started and even the riots started, they're not demonized in the same way. And it's like, oh, we get to pick and choose who we demonize and who we don't demonize. And this seems like very corrupt and just wrong. I also, by the way, as I had mentioned months ago, I found there's something about, and maybe it's like having a kid now affects the way I look at this, but there's something about like boomer generation like criticizing the Gen Z generation that just really bothers me. Like, it's like, you're the parents and you're talking about how horrible your children's generation is. Well, then that's kind of a reflection on you. You raised them. It's like if my daughter, you know, grew up to be like a really bad person, and then I'm just there like, look what a terrible person she is. Because yeah, that's a reflection on you, actually. That means you failed. Like, that's your whole job in life was to produce a good person. Anyway, that always just really bothered me. But then it was just the selective outrage. You remember the video of the NBC reporter who's fucking demonizing the guy walking by for not wearing a mask?
Yeah, he goes,
look at this guy. Look at this guy right here not wearing a mask. And he goes, your cameraman's not wearing a mask. And he actually, then the video came out where he had his cell phone video. And it's like, oh yeah, his cameraman standing a few feet away from him, he's not wearing a mask. But the guy's not sitting there, you know, doing the report going, you know, my cameraman's not wearing a mask right now. I'm pretty outraged about that. Now you have two people not wearing a mask in his immediate vicinity, but he gets to choose who he, you know, is. So this is the thing about social norms when there's not a fair application of you know, the people who are deemed violating the rules. It can be, it becomes a real tool for authoritarianism. Like, oh, okay, well, we're going to decide you're the bad one. And so, you know, what is it? I mean, you know, it's you made a good point before. Like, a big part of it is that the Trump guys are like openly saying, look, we don't agree with all of these restrictions, or at least we're not going to follow them. You know, that's kind of their thing. Like, we're going to have rallies. If people don't want to wear masks, they don't have to wear masks. We're for going back to work. We're going to have a Christmas party at the White House. We're going to do all of this. We're just doing it. So whatever, we got to live our lives. But the reality of the situation is that everybody is living their life to the best of their abilities at this point. And all of the powerful people, they're all still living their lives. From the fucking, was that mayor in Chicago who went to go get her hair cut? Nancy Pelosi is getting her hair cut without a mask on. Dianne Feinstein was seen without a mask on. Fauci's been videotaped without a mask on. Newsom is out to dinner. Cuomo's been videotaped without a mask on. Like, all of these people, it's all full of shit. Yet if any of them pop positive for COVID, we don't start going, or at least the corporate press doesn't start going, oh, this is their fault. And who have they spread it to and stuff like this? You know, it's like, it's just not reported this way. I saw the, here is it? I had it pulled up here. Let me see if I can find it. So over at CNN.com, right? And this is, but these are the tactics of the corporate press, right? Like, this is how they report on things and kind of give you this impression. Like, I mean, we're just doing hard news here, but the way they do hard news is so revealing of their agenda. So here's reading from a CNN.com. The article is by Jeremy Diamond. Here's the article. Rudy Giuliani, President Donald Trump's personal attorney, in the face of his long shot legal challenges to overturn the presidential election results, has been hospitalized after testing positive for COVID-19. I mean, look, I pick on that too much, but you could also, you know, like, you could also say Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York or something like that. But, you know, anyway, whatever. That's how they describe it. The 76-year-old former New York mayor was admitted to Georgetown University Hospital on Sunday, a source familiar with the matter confirmed to CNN. Giuliani appears to confirm his positive diagnosis hours after it was announced on Twitter by Trump by tweeting that he's getting great care and feeling good. There have been no additional details provided about his condition, and it's unclear whether Giuliani received a positive test when Giuliani received a positive test for COVID-19. He and his spokeswoman have not responded to CNN's request for comment. Now listen to this. Now this is the tactics of the corporate press, right? The news immediately raised concerns about the extent to which Giuliani, who has frequently appeared maskless while crisscrossing the country in recent weeks to advance Trump's baseless claims of election fraud, may have spread the virus amongst public officials. So this is the attitude, like when Giuliani gets COVID. The news immediately raised concerns. Well, did it? Or are you just inserting, this is how they like insert their narrative into what's supposed to be an objective news piece. You know, the news immediately raised concern because he's been going all around all the time, you know, advancing Trump's baseless claims. So right away, it's like he's been needlessly doing this bullshit all over the country. And by the way, he didn't have a mask on. And so now it's okay if you're our political enemy, if you get COVID, to start saying it's your fault for getting COVID. Who else have you given COVID to? By the way, you didn't really even need to be out there doing this. I mean, it is, I suppose, unessential work, according to the corporate press. Yet, just for example, right? What's her name? Fuck. I think it's Stephanie Ruhle. She's an MSNBC anchor. She just popped positive for COVID. You know, I highly doubt you're going to see any type of stories saying, you know, we're really concerned. Was she wearing a mask? Who else was she around? When did she test positive? Did she tell people immediately that she tested positive? No. There won't be any of that. It's just like, oh, hope you get well soon. And if anything, the message is like, that's how serious this virus is. You know, it's really another reminder that COVID is so terrible. And we got to make sure, you know, thoughts and prayers for Stephanie Ruhle and her family and all this, you know. So that's how you get treated if you're on the corporate press's side versus the other side. That's it. It's like you can be totally demonized if you're if you have bad politics, according to them, and you get COVID. It's a very weird thing that even with if somebody gets lung cancer from smoking cigarettes their whole life, it is, you know, something that they did to themselves that they brought on. But when you find out they have cancer, it'd be kind of in bad taste to start being like, yeah, see, this is what you did. Like, you got it, you know, and all this. But with COVID, it's not even like you're doing something to yourself. It's like, I don't know. You got some floating particle like that got into your like mouth or something like that. And now you tested positive for a virus, which he will probably be fine. you know, but we have to like make this whole thing about, you know, it's just like, it's very obviously implied there is like, this is his own fault. And he's, you know, a jerk for going around, and he's basically now has, you know, kind of blood on his hands or whatever. All of it, meanwhile, like, it's like, I don't know, it's a guy in his mid 70s who's sick. Where's the, you know, doesn't seem like there's any compassion all of a sudden for that type of thing. I find it very disturbing. I don't know. And I'm no Giuliani fan either, but, you know, it's just noticing the tactics of the corporate press. Meanwhile, of course, we're all still supposed to be freaking out about COVID. And it does look like, you know, as we've been saying, that we're in for what Joe Biden called a dark winter. It does look like we've got Joe Biden's dark winter, you know, from, and I'm not talking about the virus, but the government response to it, of course. But in California, they have issued some stay-at-home orders. I think San Francisco is completely locked down right now. New Jersey just put new restrictions into place starting today. And it's like ridiculous restrictions. Restrictions on outdoor gatherings, you know, things like that. Things that don't, you know, the insistence on people wearing masks outdoors, which is just, you know, under most conditions when people are outdoors, it's absolutely ridiculous. And that's the thing that's, you know, especially creepy. It's like, if you live in, say, New York City, maybe you don't exactly get it. But in most parts of the country, when people are outdoors, they're not on top of a lot of other people. You're walking very far away from the people around you. And it's very easy to distance and stay away from other people. The idea that you have to walk down the street with a mask on is just like, it's ridiculous. It really verges on it's something that a paranoid person would do, not something someone following the science would do.
Also, as a person that's not wearing, like, I wear a mask if I go into a store and you got to wear a mask, sure, like, because I'm being a dick. But if you're walking around on streets, everyone's pretty courteous, where it's like people just kind of know to keep their distance. Like, so even me, like, I'm not wearing a mask, I think, but I don't walk right into people. Like, yeah, if people are coming the other way, I take, like, I step to the side. Everyone's just pretty courteous about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Most people are like courteous and take the reasonable, you know, accommodations, or provide, or take the reasonable, just, you know, like steps to, yeah, be like, okay, I won't be right on top of you. You're not going to run up next to someone's shoulder and start coughing. You know what I mean? But it also, then the other thing that is the really, that like the worst part about the rules is like any type of government enforcement of them. That's like always the worst part. But the other thing, and this has been true through all of COVID, is that it gives rise to all these like would-be authoritarians who just don't have the means or ability to be an authoritarian. So there's like all of these people, you know, there. I know my wife went to a supermarket with my mother-in-law last week. And they were telling me about this story. So they're at a supermarket, you know, just shopping together. And they're, you know, masked up, because you have to be in a mask at these supermarkets. And then some other like older woman was like masked up, and she comes over and starts, looking at fruit or something. I don't know. She's like, you know, close to them. And some guy comes over and he goes, "Oh, excuse me, are you guys together?" And they were like, "Huh? No, we're not." And then the woman just walked away or whatever. And then the guy comes back over to my wife and mother-in-law and goes, "Oh yeah, I noticed you guys weren't together. I just wanted to make sure she wasn't getting too close to you." And both of them just bitched out this guy. Like, he thought he was going to come over and just be like this kind of like, "Oh yeah, what a noble, what a white knight," or something like that. And they were like, "She's fine. Why don't you mind your own business?" Just like sent him away with his tail between his legs. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. My fucking Italian Jersey family. They're fucking the best. But they were right away just like, you know, I mean, without being this rude, they were both
buy
like,
your own vegetables, you queer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, more or less, like, that was the implication, I think. You know, they weren't like that shitty about it, but they made him feel tiny, which was completely appropriate. And I'm glad they did it, because it's like, hey, buddy, How about you fucking mind your own goddamn business? You want to be a hero? Go actually help somebody. Fucking beat it.
There are carrots over there. You can see what fits best in your asshole.
Well, I don't know. What, they're not from Boston. Anyway, but you know, like, it, but it's shit like that where it's like, oh, now Mr. Little fucking busybody would be authoritarian fucking douche. You're going to come over and start. Oh, and I just hate it. I hate this. The fact that you have leaders who are promoting this type of culture is truly sick. However, anyway, what's much worse than that is that they're, you know, ruining people's lives. And it does seem to me that the number of people, and this is one of the real silver linings, one of the real positive signs, is that the number of people who are not just over this shit or see through the bullshit of lockdowns, the number of people who are actually prepared to start resisting them seems to be growing. And that is a really, really good sign. You know, me and you were talking briefly before the podcast, and you made the point that one of the things that's really hard about doing this round of lockdowns is that generally people know a lot more about the virus now, right? Like, that's the point you were making.
No, I was just saying at this point, you can't pretend like people aren't educated about the virus.
Yeah.
And so people should be allowed to make decisions for themselves. A venue Saturday night decided to rent me their location. I had fans that decided to show up. I decided to drive there and go and do a show. We all know the risks of COVID. We decided that we wanted to do that. The fact that government's going to tell you you can't operate your business, you're not allowed to, like, while they're still working, every single news anchor that's telling you you're not allowed to work, they're working right now. What right do they have to tell you you're not allowed to do your business? And then the idea that people aren't educated enough at this point to make their decision, like, maybe you could say week one, no one knows what this virus is. So until we educate the public, we gotta make things closed until people know that they need mat. Everyone knows now. They're making decisions for themselves. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's, you see, right, like, and this is, of course, like, the constant theme that's going on is that you have all of these people, and I would say I would take it a little bit more, like, I would at least have more respect for someone who was advocating we need to shut all these things down if they were one of the people getting shut down and getting screwed over. You know, like, you could at least, like, listen to that person a little bit more. If there was some small business owner whose business has been destroyed, who's fallen behind on their mortgage, who's literally doesn't know how they're going to get their next meal or how they're going to pay their next bill. And they were like, look, but this is, we just have to do this anyway. All right. You could at least listen to that person. But when you got some, like, fucking, I don't know, cable news host who's making millions of dollars a year and has been, their job security has been protected this entire time. If you have some, you know, some congressman or congresswoman who's making six figures, whose job is protected this whole time, someone in the teachers union, something like that, it's like, yeah, maybe you should shut the fuck up. Like, maybe no one's going to really respect your opinion on this. And then you have people like this fucking restaurant owner in Staten Island. I know that case was getting a lot of attention, where they're in a different position. They've already lost everything this year. And they're like, no, this is it for us. You know, we've already put, you know, hundreds of thousands of small businesses out permanently. And there seems to be, like, no concern about the ones that could still survive if you just let them do, if you just let allow what you just described. Like, at this point, everybody's aware of COVID. Everyone knows what COVID is. Everybody knows what the risks are. So can't we logically deduce that the people who would still be willing to go to work, or the people who would still be willing to go to, you know, to be customers at that place of business are all, you know, like, okay, well, we are comfortable taking this risk. Like, what's the problem with that? And then, of course, the argument will always be like, oh, yeah, but what about the risks for other people? Then they go home and see grandma. It's like, okay, so that's on grandma then. Then she's taking that risk by seeing other people. If she wants to not take risks, she can isolate herself. But let the rest of us who actually want to live our lives do so. I had an article about the guy in Staten Island. Pulled up. Let me see if I can find that.
Is that the guy who's just like, I'm keeping my restaurant open at this point?
Yeah, he went on Tucker Carlson and was like, I'm keeping my restaurant open. And he ultimately ended up getting arrested. And this has happened with a lot of people who have gone on Tucker's show and basically, you know, told Tucker's huge audience that that they're going to defy the rules and stay open even when they're told not to. Well, the state comes down and makes an example out of them. So they actually arrested this guy. And then a whole bunch of people, you know, it drew huge protests. This was in Staten Island. And again, this just goes to the tactics of the corporate press. And you notice, again, these are like, you know, this is how they claim to be doing journalism, but their agenda is right there. It's so thinly veiled. Their agenda is right underneath it. So here the title of the article, this was on the Washington Post. Hundreds of Staten Island protesters rally around a bar shut down for defying COVID rules. And they're chanting, "Open up." So that's a fine title, by the way. I have no problem with that. But let's read the article. The article is by Timothy Bella. So here's the article. Hundreds of mostly maskless protesters stood shoulder to shoulder outside a Staten Island bar on Wednesday night to demonstrate against the state's coronavirus restrictions and support a tavern that was forced to shut down for flouting those guidelines. The raucous scene of about 400 demonstrators in front of Mac's Public House came a day after plainclothes city sheriff's deputies busted the bar, which had been operating without a liquor license, for serving food and alcohol to patrons, including past the 10 p.m. citywide curfew, in exchange for mandatory $40 donations, authorities said. Right away, it's pretty hilarious. This is their way to get out of the whole thing. No, because they took this guy's liquor license, basically, because he was defying the rules. The bar's owner previously declared the establishment an autonomous zone and had publicly taunted New York Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio. Sheriff's deputies arrested Mac's co-owner, Danny Presti, on Tuesday for obstructing governmental administration, and a cook, bartender, and the bar's lawyers were also charged, according to the Daily News. The tavern's defiance is part of a larger pushback from bars and restaurants in Staten Island, a borough largely sympathetic to President Trump, that are flouting the state and local restrictions imposed to help stop the spread of a virus that has killed more than 24,000 throughout New York City. The state is facing significant surge in corona cases, hospitalizations, and deaths over the past week, according to data compiled by the Washington Post. Now that right there is exactly how this is the corporate press at work. These are the tactics of how to push their agenda. Oh, we're just reporting the news, right? They're just reporting the news. But you can see how they present the news, right? So first off, a borough largely sympathetic to President Trump. So right away, wink, wink, nod, nod, the bad guys who are only doing this for their own political reasons. And then of course you say, you know, flouting the state and local restrictions imposed to help stop the spread of the virus that has killed more than 24,000 people, and the virus is surging and blah, 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 and all this. But this is, of course, this is in the realm of just opinion piece shit, because you could just as easily just say, instead of saying, you know, opposing these restrictions, which are there to help, you know, stop the spread of a virus, which has killed so many people, you could just as easily say they're there to oppose these draconian lockdowns, which have destroyed so many businesses and led to all of these horrible problems, right? Like, but instead, we're not going to mention any of that. We're just going to talk about the people getting sick from the virus. You know, like, that's what we talk about. As the corporate press, they're so fucking dirty, man. And this is why it's important to, like, fucking go over this shit, because people do fucking read this stuff. But anyway, you know,
the part that scares me is in my area, all the restaurants are open, so I haven't had to confront this. But you look at what's going on in California to restaurants. It's it's part of my Jew nervous brain that, like, they're going to go sector by sector. And the laws that they've put in place to close these restaurants make no sense. Like, I mean, you just see the way that they're enforced. I saw someone tweet, like, you're telling me 200 people can be on a plane, but 25 people can't be on my outside patio. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. But as the general public, because most of us aren't restaurant owners, it's not like we've really protested on their behalf. And honestly, like, that's really what we should be doing. If government's taking a single sector and removing their rights to do something like that, that you're violating a person's right to have a family. Like, people had good businesses. They're now going to be fucking broke. We're just lucky that we weren't in that industry. Could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
Who wants that risk in society? It's horrible.
Oh, it's absolutely awful. And of course, the other thing, and this goes back to the point I was making before about the selectivity in who gets hammered and who doesn't. So Rudy Giuliani gets hammered. Stephanie Ruhle does not, right? So in the same way, of course, oh my God, it was such a concern that in New York City, there were a few hundred people protesting maskless who were standing very close to each other. Do we see any Washington Post articles about the protests that consisted of hundreds of thousands of people in New York City? Right? Oh, no, because they were protesting police brutality. They were protesting racism. So that's acceptable. That form of protest is acceptable. But this guy, you know, a few local people who are protesting that some guy is being ruined, that his livelihood is being crushed by the state. Oh, we've decided that that's not a legitimate protest. And also, by the way, you know, the borough largely supported President Donald Trump. So they've got the wrong politics. I mean, it's disgusting. Here's another one just for fucking corporate press tactics. This one was just fucking insane. So here's Yahoo News. Okay. So this is about the governor of South Dakota, who of course also is on team bad because she's a Republican governor who's, you know, been guilty of, as they say, downplaying the virus. But listen to this. Listen to what dishonest pieces of shit they are. This is a great example of what Michael Malice always says, that the corporate press is factual, but not truthful, which by the way is not completely accurate, because quite often they're just not factual either. But many times they are factual but not truthful. So just listen to this. Listen to this headline. Okay. Christy Noem's grandmother died in a nursing home hit by COVID-19 as the South Dakota governor continued to downplay the virus. So what does that make you think?
She's at fault?
Well, kind of. Well, it might make you think that her grandmother died of COVID, right? Except here's the problem. She didn't. She was a 98-year-old woman, 98 years old. She died in a nursing home and she was negative. She did not die of COVID. She didn't have COVID. But if you actually listen to what they said Christy Noem's grandmother died in a nursing home hit by COVID-19. So factually, okay, they're right. But what an outrageously dishonest title, right? That they would say she died in a nursing home. So in other words, she died in a nursing home where they had some COVID patients. She had nothing to do with it. Every nursing home has been hit by COVID-19. Yeah, like across the fucking, you know, country. Look, in fucking New York, where of course the government policy was forcing COVID patients into nursing homes, but in New Jersey, in places where they had like harsh lockdowns, the nursing homes were still just decimated by COVID-19. And in Sweden, where they didn't have harsh lockdowns, the nursing homes were decimated by COVID-19. Look, nursing homes have been hit hard by this for whatever reason. It spreads like wildfire in there. You know, there's, I don't know exactly what it is, but I think that there is overwhelming evidence at this point. It might be from T-cell immunity. It might be from, I don't know exactly, but it's young children spread the disease much less than old sick people in a nursing home. Okay. And they have not been able to keep these things out of nursing homes. And part of that is the fact that in nursing homes, there's people who need help with everything. I mean, they need help to eat. They need help to change. They need help with all of these things. So there's people on top of them. Those people come and go. I don't know exactly the details of it, but the idea of saying she's downplaying this virus when her own grandmother died in a hospital, in a nursing home hit by COVID-19. I mean, this is obviously to make you think that even though she's downplaying it, her own grandmother died of COVID-19 because people were downplaying it. Except that's not the case at all. For her grandmother didn't die of COVID-19. She was 98. She died because she was 98, most likely. You know, like this is, she lived, I don't know, what is it, 20 years past the average life expectancy?
No offense, 98-year-old, but if you die 2 months earlier than your expiration because of COVID, that wasn't worth closing people's businesses for.
Well, yeah, which is a harsh thing to say, but you're absolutely right. But, you know, obviously they're trying to, you know, project something onto her there. It's just incredibly dishonest, reporting. And again, of course, this is, we'll choose how we report this. So if this was someone with good politics, if you are for the lockdowns and for ruining all of these people's lives and this government totalitarianism, and your grandmother died of COVID, we'd have nothing but sympathy for you. But you're going to get a slap on the wrist, even though your grandmother didn't even fucking die of COVID. Is the corporate press is truly the enemy of the people. It's one also, thing Donald Trump got right.
They another just thing in the misreporting is they love reporting the stats of increase, like the increase, like, oh, there's such a dramatic increase. And like, then you'll see the percentages. If you just look at the total death rate for this country, like I think there's been 227,000 deaths total. There's 330 million people in this country. That's not even, that's like a fucking blip. It's like 0.008%, or it's like, it's nothing. Like if you were to conceptually, like imagine you were an alien and you were looking at footage of the United States and you're like, look at how this country's operating. What do you think happened? I would have thought 30% of people died because there was a, you know, virus sent from another country and it decimated the population. And now everyone, you know what I mean? Like I wouldn't think that it's been less than 1% death.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's not to say that like it's not very sad for people who get sick and who die from this stuff, but to shut down the country over, it's
for government to tell you can't run your business. Fine, maybe there is a situation where government can and should do, maybe, but guess what? It's not this one. This is not that incident.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that's interesting in going into this next round of lockdowns is that it's not like March. It's not like March where it was this unknown thing and they were scaring people that, and they were saying that the death rate was much higher than it turned out to be. And the projections of how many people could die was much higher and all of this stuff. That's not what we're dealing with anymore. People know at least a little bit about this stuff. And particularly the people who really just want to get back to work. They know enough to look at this and be like, wait, what? It's a 99.9 survival rate for me. Okay. I got to go to work. I don't have an option for this. So hopefully there'll be more of this resistance. And, you know, every business out there who's doing it, you got my full support. I think it's awesome. Maybe I'm going to try to like, see if we can't get some, people who are actually like resisting this shit on the show and try to get them some support and shit like that. I'm thinking about it, but anyone's got any ideas on that and how we can help support some of these people who are taking these noble stands against the government? I'm all ears and open to that. Anyway, that is our show for today. Thank you guys very much for listening. Go check out Robbie's other show, Run Your Mouth. Are you putting that stuff that you were doing live on Run Your Mouth?
Starting next week, I'm going to start putting the clips up. Maybe
awesome.
I have a really good piece on the faulty science. Maybe we'll just put it up at the end of a part of the problem if you're cool.
Absolutely.
With that.
I'd love to do that. Yeah, I've been hearing back from people who went to the shows that it was a really great show. So yeah, you guys check that out. Check out Run Your Mouth, and also maybe we'll put some of that on here, and follow Rob on Twitter @RobbieTheFire. All right. Thanks for listening. Be back soon. Peace.